Track 5, Body Image and Self-Mutilation. On the last track, we discussed the reason teens are so susceptible to self-injury, a drive for perfection, triggers from childhood, and the construction of identity. On this track, we will observe how loathing one's body and preoccupation with food can lead to self-mutilation. Also, we'll discuss the difference between male and female self-injurers due to the way in which they vent their emotions. As you know, many self-injurers develop a loathing of their own body. The majority of people who self-injure are women between the ages of 13 and 30. In girls, many times this stems from a fear of sexual assault, leading them to injure themselves in order to prevent an assault. Self-injury in these cases can manifest itself from the severe, such as mutilating reproductive organs, to the less severe but seriously dangerous eating disorders. 19-year-old Lori is one such case of self-hate. Lori stated, "I'm not comfortable in my fat body. When I'm at a normal weight, I wear a 36C bra, but that's still too big for me to be comfortable. I don't appreciate guys staring at my chest or me thinking that the only reason they want to be with me is for sex." Lori dealt with her negative self-image by gorging on food to make herself unattractive. She, like other women, feel that this makes her less vulnerable to a sexual attack, when in fact, low self-esteem and, as you know, bad health made her even more at risk for an attack. You probably have observed, like I, that many self-injurers tend to have a preoccupation with food. Some range from mild to serious. For survivors of sexual abuse, this may be their way of reconstructing the boundaries that have been torn down. Most of the time, however, eating disorders stem from a psychological hatred of the body. Tony, age 19, stated that his anorexia predated his self-mutilation. "I wanted to be perfect, and the strong belief that I wasn't made me want to punish myself by depriving myself of food." Because food can have a nurturing connotation about it, Tony felt that he had to deny himself of any pleasure. He saw his needs as dangerous and destructive. Interestingly enough, his self-injurious actions are more detrimental than his perceived dangers. What do you think of that paradox? To help Lori with her eating disorder, I found the self-esteem log to be beneficial. I asked Lori to write at the end of the day 5 things that made her feel accomplished, attractive, and self-assured. This included compliments she received or tasks she had struggled at and had finished. Lori wrote down in her self-esteem log, "I cleaned my room. My friend admired my grades. My brother asked me for help with his homework. A boy smiled at me." At the end of the week, I asked her to review her log and recall those positive moments. By emphasizing the positive and not the negative aspects of her life, Lori could start to open the door to improving her self-concept. Are you treating a Lori whose self-mutilation has also materialized through overeating? Would a self-esteem log be beneficial? Now, let's look at the difference between female and male self-injurers. As you know, females tend to make up a larger portion of the self-injury population. This can be accounted for by the difference in the way each gender expresses themselves. Adolescent girls, as you know, tend to turn their emotions inward, while males vent their emotional stress through physical contact such as fighting. These delinquent activities oftentimes land a male in jail who might more than likely be in a psychiatric hospital being treated for self-injurious behavior. Tony was beaten regularly by his mother's various boyfriends. In addition to his anorexia, to escape this, he immersed himself in alcohol, drugs, and self-mutilation. One interesting aspect of Tony's case is his incapacity to place the blame on his mother. He stated, "The most significant thing about my mom is her unwavering sense of loyalty and integrity. She's the most important woman in my life. She possesses an almost impeccable sense of morality." As you can see, Tony had completely distorted his reality, letting himself misplace the responsibility of his actions. By misplace, I mean that Tony refused to let himself vent his ever-building emotions. To help Tony with his reality distortion surrounding his mother, I found the autobiographical sketch exercise beneficial. Tony had assimilated an idealized image of his mother into his mind. To separate Tony from that idealized image and to put his mother in perspective, I asked Tony to write a chronology of his life events and to put them into perspective. Several topics I requested him to consider are the following. 1. Family composition, such as the relationship with his mother and her many boyfriends. 2. Strengths and positive aspects of childhood. 3. Alcohol and drug history. This included a time period of when the substance abuse started and what was going on in his life at that time. 4. Adolescent friends. 5. Job history. 6. History of self-injury. Again, the time period of when it started and what was occurring at that stage in his life. 7. The happiest and unhappiest moments in life. Here's a summary of his responses. Tony related that his parents divorced when he was very young. After the separation, his mother became involved with a second cousin who jumped bail after being jailed for drug sale. Because of these legal problems, Tony, his mother, and his mother's boyfriend went, as he put it, underground. Though they never married, the couple had a son, and later the boyfriend had a nervous breakdown. Then Tony's mother got another boyfriend who routinely beat Tony. Through the use of the autobiographical sketch, it became apparent to Tony that his initial statement that his mother possesses an almost impeccable sense of morality strongly contradicted reality, and that the saintly image of his mother he had previously maintained was his idealized version of her. Being able to consciously remember these negative memories helped Tony to recognize the harm that resulted from his mother's behavior. The autobiographical sketch helped to start to resolve the conflict between Tony's reality and idealization of his mother. On this track, we have discussed how loathing of one's body and a preoccupation with food can lead to self-mutilation. Also, we've discussed the difference between male and female self-injuries regarding the way in which they vent their emotions. Would it be beneficial to you to replay this track to review the techniques of the self-esteem log and the autobiographical sketch? On the next track, we will discuss the various ways a family can be affected by self-injury. We'll talk about shock and guilt, anger and resentfulness, and stronger bonds. Question 5. What is a technique you might consider using with your self-mutilating client who idealizes someone who is abusive to them?